The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here. Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Marcus with Sean Hackett. Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida, and he's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the world of ag commodities. Sean, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good, Casey. Real good. Had a good vacation. Had some good speaker engagements last week in Ontario, North Dakota. Got three here in Kansas in April. And we're getting ready for the growing season. So always a time to get ready for what might lay ahead or lie ahead. So
yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming at us here. Talk a little bit real quick on the wheat market real quick. I had a question from a listener that said that he'd heard about some cold temperatures in the Garden City, Dodge City area of Kansas, that southwestern kind of central part of western Kansas. I guess, Sean, looking at that, any real concerns there yet on what we see on any damage to any wheat, any reports that you may have heard?
I've heard some minor reports of damage in a fairly small area. Most of the ground had snow on it to the north. Where the colder temperatures were. So, oftentimes these winter storms that bring in a lot of the cold, the snow comes in ahead of it, which this, in fact, did happen. So it doesn't look like to me this is a high-impact event. We continue to believe that the frost potential, elevated frost potential we see in the first couple of weeks of May has a much greater gravity to it because you're not going to have the snowfall during that time frame. And the temperatures you need in May to create a major damage to the crop is considerably higher than what you need here in March. And so while there's always can be some damage, and I'm not saying there wasn't some damage in that area, I don't think it's enough to worry the market or move the dial on the market at this moment in time.
Right on. Okay. Keep an eye on that as we move closer to some more critical stages there, but cold temperatures are kind of weaving their way in and out of, especially overnight temperatures are weaving their way in and out as we move into spring. So we'll keep a close eye on that one. Developing story that I think is worth talking about here. We've got this avian flu, which is not anything new. I mean, it's been avian flu has been around forever. You know, we've impacts the chicken and turkey, the poultry markets quite a bit every year, but it has made its jump to dairy cattle now. And that's that could be setting the stage for a very huge impact on the dairy side. Sean, I guess, what have you heard about this and what are your kind of, what are your thoughts on all this and what are some of the directions you can see this take?
Well, it started in Texas. That's the origin of it. And the importance of that is a lot of dairy cattle that are purchased in other parts of the country are purchased from Texas. So the problem is if that's where this infection began, how many of these dairy cattle that were purchased by others outside and then brought them in, how many of those dairy cows had it, didn't know we had it, and are now, you know, it's highly, highly contagious. As you know, when it gets into the poultry flock, it's just, you know, it's very contagious. So that's the first thing. We now know it moved into Kansas. We now know it for a fact it's in the Dakotas. We now know it's in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. And now all the state veterinarian heads are looking for it. And I think we're going to find out that it's going to be pretty much in most of the key producing areas of the country. It just looks to me like it's the cat's out of the bag on this and this and it's spreading. What we know that those that have had it, that are on the ground, that have experienced it, that the initial impact is that you see a 10 to 15% knockdown in production in the first month of those infected animals, and then they recover. And it's anticipated or expected that we could see a 1 to 2% shortfall of production on those same animals for up to a 4 to 6 month period below what would normally have been expected from them before they kind of come full circle and get back to normal. That's the best guess that they have right now. This is mainly affecting older dairy cows, as is typically the case. Those that are least able to fight something like this, Casey, doesn't seem to be impacting the younger, you know, the mid-age or younger aged dairy cattle. What this basically has meant that those that are getting infected, they're seeing about 15 to 20% of the herd getting infected by this. So you could kind of run these numbers that if 15 to 20% of the herd initially sees a 10 or 15% knockdown of production in the first 30 days and a 4 to 6, 1 to 2% reduction cumulatively every month for 4 to 6 months, that's a huge production hole. Already production was supposed to be down year over year, Casey, and this is being addition right to that. So that is just a huge hole in production that and on top of this we have a huge heifer shortage, so that if we wanted to rebuild a herd because these higher prices come, there's just I don't believe that we can turn on the switch as quickly as we've done in the past. Meaning we might not be able to turn on the switch. We have a record number of new processing plants that are expected to come online between now and the end of the year that all want milk to make more cheese and byproducts at the time that we may not have any supply to give them. So the setup here is just extraordinarily, you know, it's extraordinarily dangerous situation, what it could mean for U.S. supply demand imbalance. Short term, there's some that are worried that we could get a consumer pullback, meaning they'll get scared that somebody on the media is going to show a dairy cow falling on top of itself because it has that it has avian swine flu. Because of that, they're going to buy less dairy products for a while. I feel because this has been around for so long, Casey, and it's been infecting the poultry industry for so long, and people don't stop eating chicken because they're just they are aware that it's not something that's going to be a major problem for them. Because of that, I think whatever consumer reaction or negative consumer reaction probably is going to be fairly modest, because we do pasteurize milk. It does take care of something of that kind of situation. And it is not, it's not like it's an unknown disease that we have no idea what it means. It just means that it has never been, it's never jumped to dairy cattle before. And maybe there'll be some different perturbations about it that are a little different than how it impacts chickens. I mean, chickens, you know, they just kill them all off and they reproduce them in 3 months and all was well with the world. We're not going to be killing off the dairy herd. We could call cows, but I don't think the solution is going to be, you know, kill every dairy cow that has avian swine flu. I think you're going to let it go through the process, let it build immunity, and we're going to have it hit the production. So I would say that, you know, the thing that the two things that I'm watching or that we should be watching for is there a consumer short-term reaction? Is there going to be one? A lot will that will be determined on how this plays out in the media. And secondly, you know, do we continue to see this spread in more and more states and more, you know, areas to where this is going to be a nationwide problem? So far, it looks like it's continues to spread at a rapid pace. And in the next few weeks, you know, if we continue to see that spreading, then that's going to be a major issue. And so I really think that, you know, this is a big, big situation to pay attention to, because, you know, dairy is something that's consumed by just about everybody in the country in some shape, way, or form. And if dairy prices go skyward, as they could do in a situation like this, you know, the price of dairy products that we see in the store, you know, could get uncomfortably high. So we have to be very mindful of how we manage that situation going forward. And, you know, who knows, you know, maybe it means we import milk from Europe or something like that. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, we like to be exporters of stuff, but I mean, this is an unprecedented situation that is evolving each and every day. But I think when it's all said and done, you know, we could be entering a very dangerous supply demand mismatch later on in the year. And so certainly if I'm in the physical buy side of dairy, meaning I need to buy these physical products, you know, I certainly would be thinking about protecting my upside price risks and something like this in case it turns into in case it mushrooms into a spike trade higher that, you know, would make, you know, those that need the buy side uncomfortable. So that's what we know now. We're getting more information every day. And but definitely something that is unprecedented and could create an unprecedented supply demand mismatch and volatility in dairy prices as we try to figure out, you know, what actually is going to be the production impact depending on how many dairy herds get impacted by this and what the actual response will be from consumers.
Right on. Well, something definitely to pay attention to. We'll keep up to date on that as we move through this and see what happens there. But it'll be, that's just, there's a lot of competition out there against milk right now. And that's one of those things that, you know, you see what's happening. And I think definitely something to pay attention to and keep things moving forward. So, all right, Sean, let's bounce over here. Let's take a look at what's going on in the cattle market. Cattle market has kind of gotten beat up a little bit here. I mean, we saw some really, really high prices for cattle over the course of probably the previous couple of months. And then we're starting to see some of those volatility and some corrections in there. Sean, talk a little bit about the cattle market.
It seems to me that the cattle market has entered a period of sideways trade. So we made that epic high in the fall. All-time highs, and then we had the big setback, and now we kind of rallied three quarters of the way back up to the upper end of the range. And I kind of feel we're just going to keep going back and forth. I think every time we get to the upper end of the range, the consumer's going to pull back. You know, too expensive. We're not going to pay that much money, and then every time that the prices come down, you're gonna buy some demand back. The lower feed price that we've been seeing is going to encourage greater weights, which will increase supply. We just got a cattle on feed report that said that we have a record number of cattle on feed, placed on feed. I think it was the biggest increased number we've ever seen since the cattle on feed report has been put out, which means there's going to be a lot of animals on feed that need to come to the market later on in the spring into the summer. And if we are putting bigger weights on them because of the cheap feed, I don't see demand being able to overcome that, at least through the spring. This is something we've been talking about for quite some time. So I think we're just going to keep oscillating back and forth in a sideways trading pattern. So, you know, those that need to buy, you know, beef and buy cattle physically, you know, buy the lower end of the range, and those that need to sell cattle and sell beef, you know, sell the upper end of the range. I feel that's where we are right now, Casey, and I think we're going to stay that way until we get through the spring season. And then as we get into the summer, if we start to see herd rebuilding taking place, and or if we start to see some weather problems develop where we get feed prices to start taking off again to the upside, as could be the case, you know, we might see prices be able to you know, gain some momentum again. But for right now, I think we're stuck in neutral within a wide trading range, but stuck in neutral for now. And you as a physical buyer or physical seller, you know, just need to take advantage of when those opportunities arise to sell or buy.
Okay. Let's talk about hogs real quick while we're on the protein side of the stuff. Looking at some reports that are coming out of China, it looks like that the sow herd and hog slaughter shrinks in February. So there's showing some contraction in China. You know, on the other side over here, we're seeing some contraction again in the hog market over here. So I guess your thoughts on the hog market. We just experienced
in the U.S. the worst 12 months equity drawdown in the industry ever seen in the history of the hog industry, meaning it's the worst losses ever seen. So, of course, the herd's not going to be growing in an environment like that. Now prices have been rallying. Right. Prices are starting to get to a level where they're becoming more attractive. When I look over at China, you know, we talked about how the African swine fever caused this significant herd liquidation last year, which means, yes, we're going to see significant contraction in the Chinese dairy herd year over year, and those numbers are starting to show up. The futures price in China for hog prices has gone skyward here, Casey, in the last few weeks. That's a precursor to the pork price going up. So what happens first is the herd liquidation ends. All those animals that have been forced on the market ends, and then the hog price starts to go up. Once that happens, now you know what that means. That means if there's less animals coming to the packing houses in China, the supply of pork's going to dry up, and then the pork price goes up. So this is very positive. This is something we've been talking about for a while. With the price of Chinese hogs going up, it now has started to clock, and we remain extremely optimistic at the back half of 2024 is going to see a significant increase in the Chinese need for foreign pork supplies, importing those pork supplies. And that means places like the U.S., like Brazil, are going to be able to sell a lot more pork to them, requiring greater demand for animals at a time that those animals are shrinking. So it's a good situation after a horrible situation that we just went through. You know, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times, you know, is the phrase that was used during the Depression about, you know, how things can be volatile and change. But I do think those that have survived in the hog industry are going to have a good ability to put some equity back into their businesses based on what we see and I see going on from here into the end of 2024. So the bad news is we had the worst 12 months in history. The good news is looks like we're going to have a very, very good period for bringing more money home in the farm, in the hog industry.
All right, Sean, good place to stop there. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing at Hacker Financial. What's the best way to do that?
Page at Feridex. It's F as in Frank, E-R-I-D-E-X 11. We have a Twitter page. LinkedIn page, and we also have our website at Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com, that sometimes we'll put some interviews on or put some information out. We're not habitual social media posters. We have more better things to do with our lives than to be on social media all day long. Obviously, trying to provide good information for our customers and subscribers, but from time to time, you know, we will put some stuff out there to keep people on tabs with what we're thinking and how we're looking at the world. That would be a great place to start.
Awesome. Well, Sean, appreciate you being on the podcast. Look forward to talking to you again. Maybe we'll get you again this week. Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the YouTube channel for the video version over at the podcast, Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. And you can also check us out on Snapchat and TikTok at Moving Iron Podcast as well. I also write some articles for Successful Farming. I do a couple articles a week, and then I do a podcast for them as well. So check that over there at agriculture.com. You can check that out over there, and you can see what's going on there. Moving Iron LLC has all the information for the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee. That will be November 4th through the 6th. Sean will be there. He'll be talking about what's going on as we look towards the last quarter of the year and what things might look like moving out to 2025. So looking forward to that. So if you have more information on that, just go to the movingironllc.com website, and you can see all that information there. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour. We're Sean Hackett. Let's move smart, folks.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people.